Today we will hear a talk on step 11. Step 11 is sought through prayer. It's sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Please give a warm welcome to Scott L. from Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Lee. I'm definitely alcoholic. I got a bad case of it, and my stopwatch just quit, so you're going to have to time me. I'm sorry. This thing needs a battery, apparently, and that puts me in a lot of trouble. Hello, and Sherry, thanks for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm an alcoholic. I got a severely bad case of it, and I'm very grateful for this chance to treat it. I love to open anything I do with a quote from Lois Wilson. Lois was asked one time what she did in the moment of silence, and she said, "I invite God to the meeting." I said, "I don't believe God's here." I do believe that. But something special happens for me when I stop and honor that presence. So in a few moments, I'm going to ask you to invite God to the meeting. Just in case you don't have a God, let me recommend you borrow mine. I recommend him very highly. He's got a great sense of humor. Keeping me sober for a little over 39 years. That's a long time for a guy that only agreed to 28 days. So if you don't have a God, borrow mine. Address him as a God of Scott's limited understanding. Get you off on the right foot. And I'll just meet you back here. Let's take a moment and each invite God to the meeting. Amen. Sought through prayer and meditation. So meditation is not extra credit. It's right there in the step. And what I've discovered for me, we talk a lot about doing the next right thing. I've discovered a last right thing. The last right thing is for me to go to bed at a reasonable hour and set an alarm so I can get up with plenty of time tomorrow, well rested, and start my day on a spiritual basis. If I don't do the last right thing tonight, I can't do the first right thing tomorrow. What I discovered is when I don't have time for morning prayer and meditation, the problem isn't in the morning. The problem was the night before. So I have to look at the truth on these things. I actually set my alarms 31 minutes apart. When the first alarm goes off, I get up, I take a quick trip to the bathroom, and I hit the go button on the coffee pot. Now, coffee's already set up. I just hit the button. And I spend the next 30 minutes in prayer and meditation. The second alarm sometimes wakes me up. It says sought through prayer and meditation. It does not say achieved. And on those mornings when I went to sleep in meditation, that's good enough. That is good enough. Lorna Kelly, if you don't know that name, look up one of her talks. She was a great one. She said these alcoholics, they don't think they meditate if they don't have an acid trip. Meditation is blue collar. You clock in, you clock out. What happens in between is none of your business, and you're not qualified to judge it. So stop. That's an important piece for me. It says when we retire at night, I'm on page 86 in the text. We retire at night, constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That list appears on several other pages, but I ask myself, what do those things have in common? Resentful. Resentment is my anger about not getting my will at some time in the past. Selfish. I want my will, and I'm not thinking about you at all. Dishonest. I don't want to, but I'm willing to lie, cheat, steal to get my will. Afraid. Fear is the deep concern I'm going to get my will at some time in the future. So what these things all say is the same thing. They all amount to my will in the forefront. That's what I'm supposed to watch for. So that's what I hunt for. It gives me a series of things to check, to ask as I close my day. And I think it's important too, and I'm going to read a couple of these. Do I owe an apology? If I get something myself should be discussed with another person at once. That's not necessarily all in red ink. Did I miss a chance to lift somebody else's spirit? Did I miss a chance to love on someone? Did I miss a chance to tell somebody how great they are or what a wonderful job I think they're doing? This is important stuff. And it's not all done in red ink. Was I kind and loving toward all? What could I have done better? These are great questions. These are great questions. What could I pack into the stream of life? My sponsor told me 39 years ago the definition of anonymity. He said, anonymity is doing something good for somebody else and not getting caught. That's what anonymity is. And doing good counts, but it counts more if you don't get caught. What I've discovered is if I do something good for somebody else and I don't tell, I get this piece of sunshine about the size of a clown nose that lodges itself in my chest. And I can think about what I did any time of the day or night, and it will glow and send light through my whole body. But when I tell, it gets out with the words. So it's critically important that I do good and don't get caught. That's an exact turnaround for me. I came to you, and if I did something bad, I hid it, I lied about it, I laid it off on you. If I did something good, I told everybody. In recovery, it's the exact opposite. In recovery, if I screw up, I got to tell you. I got to make the, if I did the mistake in public, I got to make the amends in public. If I do something good, I have to hide it. It's the exact opposite of how I came here. So many things are. And I think serving the God of love is not a part-time job. I appreciate very much being invited to use clean language at this meeting. Thank you. Thank you. I dearly love that. I don't believe it's possible to carry a spiritual message in a bucket of sewage. It can't be done. It cannot be done. One of the major changes in my life was that I cleaned up my language with a lot of help, quite frankly. I was an Air Force pilot. I was proud of my profanity. I used to go down to the docks and repulse the stevedores just for practice. Cleaning up my language was a major change for me. And thank you so much for bringing it up. I don't ever know when I'm in an AA meeting who has brought their preacher and their mother to see them get their new 90-day chip and their new spiritual program. And they certainly don't need to hear me spewing foul language while they're here for that purpose. Thank you. Forgive me. I need to get off that soapbox, but it's a big one for me. And I love that you have that as part of your opening. I really embrace that. Continuing on page 86 says, on awakening. Let me observe what it does not say. It does not say after shower and shave, two over easy and bacon, half a pot of coffee, reading the front page in a fight with her. Not what it says. It says on awakening. And I think it's because my disease gets up 20 minutes before I do every morning, does some jumping jacks or some push-ups, and it perches on the headboard and it waits. I open my eyes, roar, and it jumps on me. And I wake up with untreated alcoholism every morning. I need my medicine now. It won't wait. If I'm going to have a spiritual day, I have to start there. It says, think about the 24 hours ahead. That's as far as I can go. Considering the plans for the day, I'm going to ask God to direct my thinking. Interesting word, asking to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking mode, divorced. I'm divorced. I'm divorced from someone I once loved. Divorced is a powerful word. Divorced from self-pity. God, I love self-pity. Poor me. Poor me. It's their fault. Poor me. I love that. Dishonest. I didn't really love being dishonest, but I love what it got me. So there was a love affair there. Self-seeking motives. Absolutely. I love that. So I needed to be divorced from those things. And it says that God gave me a brain to use, but I needed to change how I used it. It says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision, unable to determine which course of action to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. We relax and take it easy. I'm going to share with you my morning prayer, this very personal thing with me. I discovered some years ago that if I open my prayer with thanking him for some things, it seems to open the channel. I don't think God needs to be thanked. I think I need to thank. It's for me. All the blocks in the channel between me and God are at my end. His end's clear. So I thank him for some things. And then I invite him in to run my life today. Now, I haven't surrendered in many years. This morning, I did not surrender. I volunteered. Surrender's after the fight. The fight's over. And I volunteered based on my own enlightened self-interest, being convinced that God's will is the single best deal there is. That includes the parts I don't like, which are usually lessons I'm resisting. The parts I don't like are normally lessons I'm resisting. But I invited him in to run my life today. And I use words like boss and manager and CEO, and I volunteer for service. I'm not a conscript. I was not drafted here. I volunteered. I need to remember that. I ask him to empty me of self and fill me with his love. Shake it together, pressed down, heaped up, overflowing, that may gush out of me all over everybody I meet today. Serving the God of love is not a part-time job. And I try to do it full-time. I don't do it perfectly. I can report tremendous progress. I ask him to bless me that I might be a great listener today. That I don't sit here writing this brilliant thing I'm going to say when you finally shut up, but actually hear you with my eyes and my spirit and my ears. to really be here, to do that loving action. I might be a great listener and a great giver of my money, but more especially of my time and my attention, my two most valuable things. I ask him to bless me that I do not judge any situations or any people. I discovered the source of all anger. I can see where it all comes from. I figured it out. It comes from being sure I'm right. I have never been angry, but I wasn't absolutely certain I was right. And being right comes from having passed judgment. I got to judge to be right, to be angry. So judgment is the grandmother of anger. And if I don't judge, I don't get right. And if I don't get right, I don't get angry. The book on page 66 says my anger will kill me. It says it will kill me dead, and I believe that. I absolutely believe it, so I don't want to be angry. So I ask him to help me, please, to not judge anyone today. To see them as he sees them and love them as he loves them, especially the ones I find unlovable. And I have to be very careful that I do not judge myself, especially my motives. I cannot trust my motives. Page 60 in the book is extremely clear on that. Principle always trumps motive. That's why step 12 does not say it had good motives in all our affairs. It doesn't say that. Good motives, the most evil thing that's ever come to planet Earth. There's a guy in Moscow, Russia today that believes he has good motive for starting a war and thousands of people dying. And he's convinced he has a good motive. There was a guy in Germany in the 1930s and 40s that had a good motive for killing millions of people. Hitler said he was trying to purify the race. He thought he had a good motive. I cannot trust my motives. Principle always trumps. It's good to have good motive, but principle always trumps motive. That has to always be the overriding thing. Principle works every time. So I ask him to bless me, please. I don't judge my motive or anyone else's. Because if I judge myself as having a good motive, if you oppose me, you clearly have a bad motive and you're a bad person and you deserve for me to hate you, and I do. And that's what good motive does for a guy like me. That's exactly what it does. I think that concept is turning my country apart today. People believing they have good motive, therefore those opposed may have bad edges. Anyway, I don't need to get up on that soapbox. So I asked him to bless me that I don't judge anybody or anything. I asked him to bless me that I'd be a good student today. If he has lessons for me, that I might learn them. I asked him to bless me I don't miss any opportunities to be of service or spread love and joy. I'll tell you one way I do that. We got a lot of traffic in downtown Nashville right now. Our city is growing at a phenomenal rate. And the interstate will come to stop. Just boom, it just stops. And what it does, instead of fuming, I reach into my vest pocket and pull out a clown nose and put it on. I drop my window a little way, and I start blowing bubbles out the window to get the attention of the other drivers. And they see the clown nose, and they laugh. Laughter is contagious. When they laugh, I laugh. We're still stuck in traffic, but I've turned it into a party. And if we stay stopped, I put it in park and get out and start passing out clown numbers, clown noses, and bubbles. And I got them, too. I'm holding. And I'm walking through the grocery store, and there's a mom there. She's got two kids, and they're good kids. I know they are. They're just having a hard day. I get 8 or 10 feet away from them and put on a nose and start blowing bubbles. And kids will lock onto bubbles like a good bird dog coming on point. They shut up from the screaming. And I go up to mom and I say, I'm a stranger. I don't want to give your children anything, but can they have the clown noses and bubbles? I got three of each on me all the time, unless I've given them away and hadn't been to the car since then. Sometimes they say, no, I got to know a couple of months ago. Usually they say, yes, what happened? Those kids had their day lifted. Who else? Mom. Who else? Everyone that saw it. Who else? Me. If I'm sloshing love and joy all over you, it splatters onto me every time. It's one of the most magnificent things I've ever come across in my life. That the path into happiness and peace isn't through trying to acquire something. There's nothing out there I can achieve, acquire, attain that will bring me happiness. Nothing. It's a side effect of trying to be of service to you. Changes everything. Changes absolutely everything. It recommends that I invite somebody into meditation. I like to meditate with other people. I do what I call the love meditation. It came out of the first men's retreat I led in 1989. We had been told that a woman in our home group had just come out of a coma. And she said that while she was in the coma, she could feel the love and prayers being sent to her. And what we call today the love meditation was born that day. And the mental image is love is a column. It's the size of the top of my head. It comes down out of heaven, down through the top of my head, out my nose, my mouth, and my chest. And I send it to all of you this morning. I send it to all the places I'm going today. I send it to all the men I sponsored, to all my family members. I said it to some people I know that are having a difficult time physically. I don't give God any instruction on who to heal. I just send him love. I'm sending love to my husband-in-law. For those of you who are not familiar with the term, my husband-in-law is the guy that's married to my first wife, right? And he's dying of cancer. And I'm not mad at him. I'm sending him love. I'm sending love to Vladimir Putin. I'm sending love to that whole war zone. I'm sending love. Serving the God of love is not a part-time job. It just isn't. So I ask God to bless me. I don't miss any opportunities to be of service or spread love and joy. I've been a big book enthusiast for a long time. I used to use another word. I like enthusiast better. And I can give you four different pages that say recovery is going to be fun. I can give you six that say some of what I know for sure ain't right. The single theme that runs wider and deeper in this book than any other is be of service, help others. It's the same thing. I read the book one time with an eye toward that, searching for it. From Roman numeral 11 through Dr. Bob's story, I counted 52 places it said that. 52. It's the number one theme in there. It's where the magic is. I was diagnosed with cancer in my throat in 20. They took my teeth, as I'm sure you've noticed, because they're going to do so much radiation to my face, they killed my jawbone. It's still here, but it is dead. They had to take my teeth out first. So radiation and chemo were very, very difficult, very painful. And my sponsor said, I'm the poster boy for how to go through cancer. And he said, how did you do it? So, well, the first thing I did was I stayed with it one day at a time. The single hardest assignment I've ever been given is one day at a time. I blew that off. Yeah, I don't drink today. It does mean that. It also means live only in this day, to get my mind here where my feet are. So I did not allow myself to say, oh, I don't know. I've been having these cancer treatments for so long, they're so hard, or I don't know how much more of this I can stand. That's barring pain from the past and barring pain from the future. I need to be right here, right now. My feet are smarter than my mind. My feet never go into the past or the future. My mind could learn a lot from my feet. And I try hard to stand today. So how do I do that? I've got three vocabularies, speaking, praying, and thinking. Three separate vocabularies. And I use the word today frequently, all three. I think all the good questions contain the word today. And all the good answers contain the word today. The question isn't, what am I doing about my finances? It's the wrong question. The question is, what am I doing about my finances today? Feel the difference in those questions? What am I doing about my relationship? What are you about it today? It takes so much of the pressure off. I had to quit trying to fix the rest of my life. I'm no good at it. I would like to read you the first paragraph in the big book chapter, figuring it all out. But we don't have that chapter. So I'm not going to be able to do that. And what that tells me, Pamela, what that tells me is that it's not my job to figure it all out. There's one who has all power, that one has God, but you find him now. Now isn't when I find God, it's where. My God is the God of right here, right now. Between the claps, I need to be right here, right now. I can see about 20 of you. Do something for me. If you're okay, right this moment, if you're okay, give me a positive nod. Nod for me if you're okay right now. Right. Thank you. How about now? Yeah, to get between the claps right here, right now. And I think that's my buddy Joe Krogan. If you don't know that name, you need to get one of his talks too. Krogan says the purpose of morning prayer and meditation is to put my spirit in a state of eager expectation for all the great things God's got in store for me today. That's what this package is about. It's about getting me eagerly excited about whatever God's got in mind for me today. Pretty powerful thing. It also says we may ask for ourselves if others will be helped. Page 13. Has become one of my favorites. The steps first appear on page 13. But about two-thirds of the way down page 13 says, never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore my usefulness to others, then only might expect to receive, but that would be a great measure. What a promise. When we did our quiet time, I asked God to make me perfect for this time, not for me, but for him and for you. I do it frequently during the day, ask him to make me perfect. For those of you who read the big book frequently, you know that they change it all the time. And they added something to page 13 just a few months ago. Actually, they added two things. About 10 lines down, the last word is friend, but it's a capital F. referring to God as a friend. I'm not sure when they added that. I think it's been within just the last few months. I know that wasn't there. I would have seen it. But the one I wanted to talk about is in the last paragraph. It said, my friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. New. Huh. That implies that before I came to recovery, I had a relationship with God. And I would have told you 6 months ago, I did not. And it's not true. I did have. It was called 911. See if you recognize any of these. These are some pre-AA prayers. See if you recognize any of them. We're not going to do a show of hands. God, please help me pass this test I didn't study for. Please don't let her be pregnant. I'm told I can be prayed in the first person. Right, Pamela? God, please don't let those flashing red and blue lights be for me. And my favorite one, I think the biggest AA prayer, the main one, is about 2 a.m. when I'm in the bathroom kneeling on the prayer rug. And I'm at the point in the proceedings where there's nothing coming out but noise and occasional tear. And I would pray this, God, get me out of this and I'll never do it again. Which is alcoholic for amen, as I'm sure you know. So the book says on page 46 that I can't understand God. But on page 28, it has this marvelous thing that I can understand. It says, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. I'm not going to understand God. I have to get out of that business. I can understand the relationship. When I look at it today, those other prayers I talked about, when I prayed them, I was trying to make him my God. I've been taught here is how to make me his man. You see, I had it upside down. But one of the problems I had when I came to you is I was afraid there might be a God based on what some religious people had told me. So that old God had to go. I'd have a friendly God who was on my side, who wanted what was best for me and everybody else, who had a sense of humor, who was available all the time, who was creative, who was eager to forgive, not just forgiving. That's not good enough for somebody like me. Eager to forgive. Yeah. And powerful. But that had to come last. And if you're new and you don't have a God, you got to hit like I did, afraid there might be one. Let me recommend you fire whatever that is you're bringing here and hire yourself a God whose will is the best deal there is, who loves you so much that your picture's in his wallet. Absolutely. If you don't think you're God's favorite kid, get a bigger God. That's all I can tell you. And I've got a God that's so friendly, that wants so much good for all of us, that when I invite him into my life in the morning, it is not a surrender. The last thing that I pray for is I quit praying for guidance over 30 years ago. It occurred to me one morning as I was praying for guidance, I'm giving God his instruction. Big fella, take a knee. Let's go with the guidance. Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but God's kind of hard to train. If you've ever tried to train God, I never had any success with that. So what I pray is that I would be open to his guidance. Not to give it to me, but if he has it for me today, that I don't miss it. And that has really been a beautiful thing for me. It has brought me such a gentle. I was sitting by a stream and I saw a cloud. I thought, I bet every drop of rain in that cloud is following God's will perfectly. I know they are. And so is that tree, so is the bird, so are the minnows in the stream. Why can't I? Man, it was on me hard. Why can't I? And I got the answer. I am. I am. I'm convinced it is not my job to be perfect. If you think it's your job to be perfect, I wish you a lot of luck. You're going to need it. But if it's not my job to be perfect, what's my job? My job is to make mistakes. Whoa, they sent the right guy. And all my life, they said, well, we learn from our mistakes. Not true. If we learn from my mistakes, nobody I'm looking at has been arrested more than once. Good luck. Good luck. No. We learn from living with the results of our mistakes. So here's the learning process as I understand it today. 1, make a mistake. 2, be notified. I don't always know I made a mistake. 3, own a mistake. That means if they only know 80%, I got to tell them the other 20. 4, consult a spiritual advisor about how to 5, make the amend. Usually, not always, there's an amend to be made. 6, embrace the lesson. The lesson comes at the making of the amend, not the making of the mistake. An enabler is someone who takes away the results, thereby blocking the learning process. 6, embrace the lesson. 7, share the lesson. That's what really sets it. 8, when I share the lesson, I have to tell you I made the mistake. If I just share the lesson, I'm preaching and nobody wants to hear it. When I stand as a sinner beside a sinner, he can hear me. 9, make the next mistake. It's God's will for me is to make mistakes. It's why I'm here. It's why I was putting his skin. It's why I'm here. So half of my freedom is I have my own permission to make mistakes. That's only half. The other half is you have my permission to make mistakes. That includes 2 former wives, Vladimir Putin, some politicians in this country, I think have got their heads up and locked. Those of you got your driver's licenses out of Cheerios boxes, everybody. Because if what you do upsets me, I'm a prisoner of your behavior. I don't want to be a prisoner anymore. So the freedom is I have my permission to make mistakes and you have my permission to make mistakes. And the two of those have combined to make me free. It says on page 87, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We don't ever read the doubtful. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not often, right? Very often, but I'm never in doubt. Pause when agitated. God is waiting patiently for me in the pause. And when I pause and say, Father, I'm angry. I must have judged. Please take away this anger and judgment and give me sadness. Anger and love never travel together. They can't. Sadness and love do. If I respond to somebody in anger, I'm going to wind up messing it up and making it worse and making amends. When I go to him and say, I have a great sadness, my love can travel with my sadness and he can hear me. It's a whole different ballgame. Sadness and love travel well together. And I believe that serving the God of love is not a part-time job. Step 11 is so critically important. Page 85, if I can get this in here, I'm just about out of time. I have a really have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. My reprieve, stay of execution, is not contingent on my spiritual condition. I don't know what it is. I'm not qualified to judge it. It's contingent on the maintenance of it. Maintenance means 2 things. It means to maintain the sense of not losing the thing I've already got. It also means to maintenance my spiritual condition in the same sense that I maintenance my vehicle. I rotate the tires. I can change the oil on time, right? I maintenance my spiritual condition, morning prayer, meditation, reading spiritual literature, sponsoring, being sponsored, letting people in traffic, saying please and thank you, passing out clown noses, taking meetings into jails and treatment centers, closing my day with prayer and meditation. I think the evening portion of step 11 is so critically important because it lets me see what kind of maintenance did I do on my spiritual condition. I don't need to worry about the spiritual condition is. Spiritual condition, like spiritual growth, is not something I do. It's something I receive. So this step 11 is about me opening up to receive. I love you very much. Thank you.